And then there was, of course, this after the Curtis Report, and the, and then we, there was this Children's Act and, and the creation of childcare workers and courses for training childcare. And then came, of course, the famous Royal Commission, which produced the 1999 Act. And the PSW really contributed enormously to evidence of that. And I remember night after night working quite late with my with many colleagues at APSW on these, on our evidence. It was, you know, we really did work hard at this and make a very real contribution. There was a sad side from my part, was this insertion of a thing about the psychopaths. And you remember, I wrote a paper, an indignation about that.
What, in the journal? Was
yes, yes.
The issue that dealt with the 59...
Yes, with that section dealing with psychopaths, yes. And I, with one or two others, went to see Kenneth Robinson, who was then Shadow Minister of Health, and I tried to persuade Kenneth that this really ought to be deleted. But he'd been well primed by civil servants, and I hadn't really grasped, in my innocence, the suaveness of some of politicians, as he had an answer for everything. You see. Well, that's how it was. And I still think it was the most unfortunate section, and I still think so. But be that as it may, we did make a very real contribution to the to that act. And of course this had an enormous bearing on the development, as you know, of psychiatric social work. because, for instance, those outpatient clinics I refer to, after the National Health Service, this wasn't the 1959 Act, but after the National, they became mandatory. So if you say, if you add all these things together, it is the development of PSW work.
Well, I wanted, am I stopping your train?
No, not at all.
I wanted to link up with something that we've been talking about earlier, and you were saying earlier about the division between, or the division between the child guidance PSWs and the mental hospital PSWs, and the problems, well, you, from your point of view anyway, that the child guidance PSWs had in understanding, or them being preoccupied with inner, whereas those, the hospital PSWs were thinking of outer as an expression of inner and having to work with outer things. Yeah, remember that earlier bit of that conversation?
Yes.
And I was thinking then about, well, you know, all right, so what we're talking about now is sort of the impact, of, if you like, of agency function on skills. There's, if you like, there's a proliferation of agency functions now in this period you're into now when you're talking about children's departments.
You mean the more agents grew up?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
With different functions.
Yes.
And each
yes.
other, and social workers having yes. to sort of find yet other methods.
Yes.
Of,
well, you see, the period I'm talking, there was your almoner, as they were called.
Yes.
There was
sorry, I didn't
hear that. Almoner, as they were called. Yes. Lady almoner, I think they were. That was their correct name. Then there was the child care office, the children's department. Then there was the probation service. Then there was the health and welfare. Now they didn't have trained social workers necessarily. They very seldom, but that was a department that dealt with a whole range of things. And
it's. Do you think, well, perhaps it's easier for you to respond if I put it in a more controversial way or challenging way. What do you say if, I mean, it could be said that PSWs responded flexibly enough or swift and quickly enough when it was the requirements for psychiatric hospitals to which towards which skills had to be adapted or child guidance clinic. But when it came to thinking in terms of a local authority children's department or a local authority mental health service, then they were slower to grasp the implications of being employed by a different kind of agency. Do you think that's a fair comment?
I think I would put the emphasis slightly different. I don't know whether anybody else to whom you've talked has.
Well, I haven't got this far with anybody else.
I see. I feel that when agencies developed, free of medical, of medicine. Now, you see, child guidance and mental hospitals are all involved with medicine, one form or another. When the children's department grew up, much to the medical officer of health's annoyance, they were autonomous.
Yes.
I think that's a correct word. Now, I think PSWs, by the nature of their training, and I can't help feeling the nature of their personality, because I hold the view that that the kind of job one chooses to do isn't necessary, it's just a question of a bit of luck. It's more to it than that. And the fact, the way in which they used to talk about their psychiatrists gave you, I think I mentioned before, gave you a clue. And I never felt that they were really. Some could, I think Elsie Thomas was one, some did adapt themselves to working in local authority community work. But I think many found it very difficult in that in that sphere, because I suppose there was a feeling that in your training and your previous work where your relationship with a doctor was a different thing from your relationship with a local authority administrator. I don't know whether I don't think anyone ever written about this, but I think there was a lot, you know, around this subject that could be well explored and thought about. And then, of course, we had by this time what I would call a new breed of PSWs, and many of them were men. And as I say, they went into local authority. Many had been mental welfare officers, and there was a 5-year, you know this, there was a 5-year arrangement with APSW, with the LSE, Mental Health Corps, you know this, don't you? Oh yes, for 5 years we would take on the Mental Health Corps a certain number of selected mental welfare officers. Some would have a social science diploma, but some probably wouldn't. So it was a question of selection and decision on that. Now, I was involved with the selection of all these, and I tutored them all when they, during that 5-year period, except one, a man called Marshall. But apart from him, I think they were all my students over this 5-year period. And I suppose I've written all this up, because I never did. Much to Kay's fury.
Yes.
Because I had all the material. Nobody else had it. Now, you see, these, and some of these men were in very key positions. For instance, one of them was young Witchley, who died recently. He was here at Shelton. But he came from the Shropshire Mental Health Department to the course, and I had met him previously, because for some years the National Association for Mental Health had run a course for mental health officers. You had a month up at Leeds under Miss, the name of them leaves me at the moment, she was head of a mental health course in Leeds eventually. Before Prince, he was her deputy at that time.
Erin.
She was Scotch.
Yes, Erin. Name something like Erin.
No, it was a woman.
Yes. Erin White.
Anyway, it was a month up at Leeds, or was it a fortnight? I don't know, a fortnight, I think, yes, mm-hmm. in residence. And then a fortnight at the end of the course. Mm-hmm. But in between time, all the London place, near London people met me at once a week, or once a fortnight, or once a week, once a fortnight now, once a fortnight, I think, at NAMH. We had a room there. Now, it could never be LCC because they didn't, their mental health office in those days only had one job.
Mm-hmm.
That was to take people to hospital.
Yeah.
Where Middlesex and Essex and Hertfordshire, they had other duties like the care, or, well, it wasn't care, it was visiting of what were called mental defectives in those days. And I had this group in London. And so that I knew Witcherley and one or two of them well, which of course stood me in very good stead when I was helping Grace with her committee. And of course, when these mental officers knew that I had been a mental nurse, and this in a way enabled, in some way, it was a help.
Yes.
Both ways, I think.
Yes.
That they knew that I wasn't talking out the back of my hat about these problems because I had experienced them, you know, in dealing with people. And now you asked me what led on to this.
Well, it was
getting late.
There is.
You said about the proliferation of agencies.
Yes, and the capacity to respond.
Oh, yes, yes. And yet I was giving one of my sort of thinking. I've often thought about this, and I think it was this difference between the medical world and the local authority world. And I remember, yes, I remember thinking of rather along these lines when I was at the Maudsley. It was about an appointment, and I, for the first time in my life, I realised I had to have glasses. My eyesight wasn't as good as it was. So I asked for a reading lamp on my desk. And they sent me, the next day, they sent me a brochure, and I'd chosen what I wanted, and the next day after that was on my desk.
Yeah.
My wife, who was the rector of the Child Guidance Clinic at Chichester, so happened she wanted a reading lamp. She filled in I don't know how many forms, and after about a month, she got it.
Yeah.
And when Reg Wright used to get on to me about my saying I would never work in local authority, I used to tell him this.
And I,
you see, there is a link between between these things.
Yes, yes. Well, what about one of the early in the year I was reading Cherry Morris.
Oh yes, yes.
And one of the essays is what. The essay in there, which kind of still, I think, still stands up today, and is, you know, I think it has really, you know, really first-class chapter, in is you know, Claire Winnicott's article on what was then the new childcare. So
she's
talking about social work in a new children's
department. Yes, yes, yes.
You know, that really was a very swift response.
Yes. Yes.
But I can't understand, why wasn't there such a swift response to the needs of the new welfare department, who are responsible, you know, for the elderly and the physically handicapped, and so on. I mean, that article of Claire stands today. You know, I was telling Alison about it and said, you know, she should tell the students to go off and read it. I mean,
yes, I think you'll have to, in all walks of life, whether it's the world of music, if you like, or the world of social work or medicine, there's always going to be one or two very exceptional people. And Claire was one, as much as Donald was in his sphere. I think that's how I personally would put it. You might say, well, that's an easy way out, but but I think that's how it is.
Yes, Well, can I ask you just two more questions, and then we'll switch the machine off, we just carry on talking. Well, you might think you've already answered. These are two questions. I'm asking everyone these same two questions.
Yes.
You might think you've already answered one of them already by implication. Some critical things have been said. Well, some pretty harsh things have been said about about social workers during this period?
This period we're talking about? Or the present period?
No, this period we're not 29, 59, I mean culminating in the sort of things Audrey Harvey and Barbara Wooten were saying by the end of this period, where social work was really taking a hammering from everybody.
Yes.
But I wonder what you'd say about it all.
Well, take Barbara Wooten in the first instance. You're thinking about her, her famous book.
Mm-hmm.
And her criticism of Pearson. Mm-hmm. Mm. Barbara's never done a day's social work in her life.
Mm.
And that would be my answer to her.
Mm. Audrey Harvey.
Yes, well, I was saying a while ago, I think paranoia is a necessary part of social work makeup, but she had a bit more than was good for her, or anybody else, I think. Mm. I mean, she did fight.
Mm.
For homeless people and people but I think one has to look at how she did it and also ask why she did it and the way she did it.
Mm.
I don't think it helped social work.
Mm.
All her criticisms.
Mm. Well, I mean, she didn't intend to help social work.
No, she didn't. No, but I wouldn't imagine she didn't, of course.
Mm.
And both she and Barbara Wooten, in a way, had fastened on to an aspect which they didn't understand.
Mm.
That was the use of a relationship in casework.
Mm.
A lot of casework literature, which of course they'd read, concerned itself about that. Well, now, one of the criticisms that could be made about the people who wrote about the use of a relationship didn't make it concise and clear enough.
Mm.
But it's one of the most difficult things to do, because you're writing about intangibles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're dealing with someone who's been ill-treated by someone who lets rooms, say, or the local authority about something, you've got something tangible. Barbara Wooten was really a scientist of a sort, social scientist. And I'm perfectly certain that things like chances and counter-chances meant nothing at all to Barbara. She had two donkeys, and she knew the difference between one and the other. But that's another story. I think that not necessarily deliberately, but unwittingly, many PSWs, especially in child guidance, gave the impression that this, what Barbara Wooten would call precious relationship, it wasn't a question of have you got enough money to pay for the rent or put in the gas meter, but what was your relationship with your mother?
Mm.
I mean, that was the sort of way in which it was handled. And in a way, they had something there, because often that was the impression one often. That's why I talked about inner and outer needs.
Talked about?
Inner and outer needs.
Yes.
Right. And why it was so difficult for many PSWs to accept, and that was why Betty Irvin's paper was quite an historical one, except that one could use authority and this kind of thing.
Mm.
In other words, to take responsibility is really what it amounted to.
Yes.
And I think Betty does in fact emphasise that word responsibility.
Yes.
And I think that many clients, and I think Barbara Wooten had cottoned on to this one, that many clients were interviewed and came away not knowing what had happened at all.
Mm.
Mm. They seemed to have no relationship to what they were worrying about, and I'm sure that happened.
Mm.
And probably still does happen, I expect, in one way or another. I think PSWs, it was this difficulty, I don't think it was inability, so much as difficulty to get across what this was about. But equally so, you see, I'm quite certain that many of the Freudian and Jungian theoretical statements were equally difficult to get across. And I think in many people's minds that, in fact, I think I told you when I was reading that paper in Holland, the Russians said I wasn't a social worker, I was a therapist. Well, that was their view of it, but many people in this country would have said the same. Quite certain they would. Many psychiatrists would have done. And which was another issue too, and very often, in not so much in the child guidance clinics, where you had a team working together, but not all child guidance was like that, I might tell you. Some were run by psychologists. In those days. But they weren't all Tavistock places like that. But in the mental hospital, I know quite well that many psychiatrists were quite jealous if they thought the PhD was doing what they would call therapy. Partly because they couldn't do it themselves. And very often PhD was a far better therapist. So there were all these kinds of tensions and difficulties. And when you think of the 7 years training a doctor has, become a psychiatrist another year or two at the end of that, where a social worker has a year or two's training, you can understand the kind of things that were built up on this one. And it was all that kind of thing that Barbara Wooten picked up, all right? And I think in the long run, she probably did quite a good, was helpful in many ways. It made her do a bit of thinking. But I remember Crawford Taylor saying to me with great glee, "Have you read Barbara Wooten's book?" And I said, "I have." And I said, "Well, I hope you know Barbara Wooten never done a day's social work in her life." That was that. But
Well, I mean, he had nothing to be happy about. She wasn't very nice about psychiatrists either.
No, but that wasn't what he was getting them. But I tell you this much. Talking about finding your place, you could only work at the Moors if you made a place yourself. And that's why I can't...
You didn't get that impression when you walked through that door. Thursday mornings, I heard the dynamos whir as soon as I walked through the door.
You were a student. But I can assure you, I decided not to go to Tavistock when Bowlby asked me there, and Honey asked me there. Partly because I didn't feel like at that time I wanted analysis, it would have been inclined in analysis. But the other thing was that I realised that in the end, as a man, it would suit my book better to do research at the Maudsley. Which is what I did. It was a research unit. And I think from the worldly point of view, it was a good thing. I stress the word worldly. But yes, I think if you you might ask people about this question of medical background, and you see, local authorities, and I mean, I am not a judge of this because I never want to know much about it, but it seems to me local authority is an amorphous sort of place. There's no. Does that describe what I mean?
Very difficult. It's a bit like civil service.
For instance, some of those clients I had more, some I say were civil servants, and were in trouble with police and prison, one and the other. And I was in contact with the section of the Home Office. I could not get anybody, a yes or no from anybody. In other words, nobody would take responsibility. They always pass the buck.
Well, then you're talking about collusion. I mean, there's massive collusion within God. The club.
Well, that's how they hang together.
Make sure nobody sort of makes anybody else get uncomfortable. That's the big gentleman's agreement there, isn't it?
It seems to be. Yes, you might just sort of try that idea about the medical world. See, there's a discipline in the medical world. There isn't, not in that sense, not a professional discipline.
That's right.
And see, confidentiality, which means so much to Margaret and me.
Yes.
I said to her, you and I, we're out of date. It doesn't exist now. I've heard Margaret heard on the phone talking to a police constable of Oxford or somebody like that, who more or less was demanding some information about a case of incest. And Margaret was quite polite to him and never gave a thing away.
Yes.
She's very good at that game.
Yes.
But, one has to learn that one. But social workers now, they work with the police as far as I can see.
Yes.
Well, I just wouldn't have anything to do with it. Partly, of course, I'm paranoid about the police anyway. I loathe the police and all that stuff.
Yes.
I went through the general strike. I can tell you a lot about the police. And I haven't time for them. I remember Adrian saying, well, damn it all, Dad, why, what kind of person wants to be a policeman or a prison officer? Ask yourself that.
Yes, right. Yes. Can I ask you my last question?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's an easy question for me to ask, perhaps, but I think probably everyone finds it difficult to answer. It's what do you think the best social work thing is you've ever done?
Oh dear, Alan, I don't think in those terms, normally.
Yes, I know everyone says. But I mean, thinking back now on all the things you've done as a social worker, what are you most pleased about?
Do you mean with clients or like the example I gave of Whitney?
Anything you like. Both of those.
Whitney's one, I feel, something about. I think in many ways, the way I was able to, because of Grace Jackson working with her London Training Committee, the way I was able to help untrained social workers who would be brought up in the health and welfare department, who were now, of course, amalgamated and everything, and had to deal with their jealousies and resentments and struggle with just as difficult problems as any trained person. And by being in residence with them a fortnight and then another fortnight and seeing them once a week, I think I was able to help them in a way I never thought I could help untrained people. And it meant a lot to them that one really cared about them.
Yes.
Now, if the question was between myself and a client, terribly ill young schizophrenics, I remember two in particular. And of course a lot of that was my knowledge and experience of Runball and working with, living with schizophrenics. But I think helping the parents, bear with what they've got to bear with, which is very, very difficult. One thing I did learn about Apipo, that one of those boys, and that was the case I presented in Holland, actually.
Yes.
His father's a doctor and GP, but we got him, or at least I and the DRO dealt with disabled people, we got him in the passport office. It was a kind of sort of job that an ill or schizophrenic can do. It was filing and things of that kind. And I discussed with the head of the department that he's one great difficulty. In fact, there were two. One, he never talked to anybody. The other one, so they thought that he was ignoring them, which he wasn't. I tried to explain them what. The other thing was that he would be late in the morning, but he would know that, and he would stay on, make up the time in the evening. That seemed to work all right, and then there was a lot of stress and difficulties with his fellow workers. They began to complain that he was late in the morning. Well, this had all been agreed, really. And I thought, this is very peculiar. And it suddenly dawned on me, I don't know why, how, that what they were really talking about was not that at all. The fact that he never talked to me, ignored them. You know the way you get this, yes. And I was through the head of the department, I was able to talk with these people. It was only a small group of them. And we, you know, sorted out with them, and I explained the best I could why this happened. And after that, there wasn't any trouble. I always think it was one of the best things I was able to do. This was a group situation, you see. Yes, I think that's one of the things that I feel very pleased about.
That's interesting, because it's an example of kind of all the subtle thinking. I mean, what you actually, the end product, what you actually do is something is quite straightforward. The subtlety and
it's how you get there
is the thing, what's gone on inside your head.
It's also a way of feeling as well. It isn't just head. I don't know how you define these things. I don't know. It's the way you sense. That's why I've always thought, referred to as some of my papers. I think hunches are not to be sneered at. They are terribly important. And sometimes you're wrong, but very often you're not.
Well, thanks very much.
Well, how are you?